This is The Guardian.
Today, the drug gangs of London and the child made to work for them. The first of a two-part mini-series presented by The Guardian's award-winning human rights journalist, Annie Kelly.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we begin, just a heads up that this episode includes descriptions of childhood abuse and violence.
It's a rainy, wintry morning, and Sosa Nkoma is getting out of a cab, miles away from home.
How are you doing?
I'm not bad.
It's taken him hours to get here. He woke up really early. But Sosa doesn't mind. He's used to travelling up and down the country. In a former life, he did it a lot, but not for things like this.
Yeah. So, welcome everybody. We've got some honoured guests. Sosa Nkoma.
He's here to give a talk at this law firm to a room of young professionals. Most of them are around his age, in their 20s, but this is probably about the only thing they have in common. At first, it's all a bit awkward. There's a lot of shuffling around of chairs and nervous laughter.
So first of all, my name is Sosa Nkoma.
Then Sosa begins to tell his story, and the room falls silent.
And I was young, didn't know where I was going, got lost, and then ended up getting picked up by the police.
Because the story he's telling is one you rarely hear. How a 10-year-old boy in London was pulled into a world of drugs and guns. Groomed into becoming what he describes as a child soldier for criminal gangs.
And when I went to the gang that told me to leave, I was handed a revolver 38.
By now, you've probably heard of county lines, where thousands of children are used by gangs to carry drugs from the cities into rural towns and communities. It's in the news all the time.
An early morning briefing for officers involved in the latest raids aimed at...
The dealers who run the lines use children as runners and expose them to danger and violence.
XL bully dogs and more than 600 weapons, including guns, nunchucks and knuckle dusters, have been...
Stats this week show knife crime was at its highest recorded level last year, its increase linked to the spread of county lines and associated...
But have you heard from one of these children who's actually gone through this and made it out the other side?
I was nicknamed the devil walking on earth. And that's because, like, I constantly just was on goal.
This is the story we're going to be telling today and tomorrow. From The Guardian, I'm Annie Kelly. Today in Focus, The Devil Walking on Earth, Part 1.
I feel like for everyone else is like shocking, but for me it's like it's living, isn't it? Like literally just part of life. Like that's what happened.
The first time I meet Sosa, it's a Friday afternoon in the Guardian office, and he's telling me how it all started for him.
I was originally born in Nigeria. I don't really remember my childhood like that.
He was born in Nigeria. And for the first few years of his life, he was mostly raised by his grandmother. His mother left him when he was 2, and his father was often away from work. But when he was 6, his dad remarried to a British Nigerian living in the UK. And so soon afterwards, Sosa came here to join them.
And so you arrived in the UK.
Yeah. And even when I arrived in the UK, for me, I remember that. when I was in Nigeria, I used to watch TV and think to myself, like, only like white people are famous. You only see them on TV because I've never seen anyone except black people in my life. So when I came off the plane, it was a big, whoa, like, whoa, everyone's famous.
For Sosa, coming to the UK felt like a dream come true.
I was looking at my stepmom as like my new mum. Like, I thought, this is like, mum, my dad tells me to call her mum, so this is my new mum. Like, and that's how I was looking at it, like, wow, I got a family, I got my mum and dad now. I'm like every other normal kid, like, literally, and that's how I looked at it.
At first, things went well. The family lived in Kent, and Sosa went to the local primary school. But after a few months, things with his stepmother turned.
So school was at first all right, but then obviously at home, slowly, I'll say first couple of months was all right, and then but slowly I started getting abused by my stepmom. First it was more of a conversational type of thing, like, oh, your dad didn't love your mum, or you look like your mum, and all of these type of things. And my dad was hardly at home because my dad was always working. So it was just me and her every day. We ended up moving to like South London now. And after moving there, everything started getting worse. Before it was literally probably hit me or then use the belt or whatever. Now we're talking like metal poles being hit on me.
Can you remember like the house at that time and what it must...
So it was a flat. One thing I do remember about that house was that I was so scared to go to the toilet that I used to wee in the corner of the room. Yeah.
So you were 8?
Yeah.
This time, right. And scared just because it was her house and she was this
It was
kind
every time I left my room, I felt like out of sight, out of mind. Because it's like every time I left my room, it means that she now knows I've left my room. And that means I might get beaten. I used to have a duvet. I started living in my head rather than reality. Duvet was my shield, literally, and I'm in a battle. So straight away, as soon as she comes in, I'm running underneath the duvet to try to protect myself. Because everything was so bad at home, I didn't know how to fit into school. So I was just having fights with everyone and anyone. I was having fights. And after that, it was a boy in my school that said to me, "Raw, like, you shouldn't be getting hit." Like, you shouldn't be getting hit. My mom can't hit. All these type of things. He was just talking in general. But for me, it started playing in my head, like, oh, that maybe it is bad.
Then one afternoon, the violence and the fear of it became too much.
Something happened when we was out where she said to me, "When we get home, watch." So for me, I already knew what was coming. But then, it's like, as soon as we got home, before we even got upstairs, it's like a hill just bounced on my head and I started bleeding.
His stepmother had taken off her shoe and without Sosa even looking, hit him over the head with the point of her heel.
And either I'm going in the elevator with her or I'm going up the stairs. That's what she asked me. I said, "I'm going up the stairs." So I went up the stairs. And as soon as I got up the stairs, the elevator takes longer than the stairs because I'm young, so I'm running up them stairs. That literally, I got at the top of the stairs and I probably looked at my hallway and I thought, okay, I can wait and go to the front and wait for her. But then there's another stairs. So there's another stairs that leads to another exit. So me, I just thought, I could wait to get in there and see what happens. So I cut, literally, I ran up.
Sosa sprinted down the stairs and out into the street, away from his stepmother. Quickly, he made a plan. He was going to take the 177 bus to get to some family friends for help. But he didn't even know where the bus stop was.
I didn't know where I was going. Ended up getting lost and ended up asking a cab station for help. And they called the police and alerted the police.
You were like still 9 or...
I was like 9.
His stepmother was arrested and eventually charged with child abuse. But his father, Sosa says, wouldn't let himself believe what his wife had been doing to his child. Sosa realised he was on his own. he'd never go back to his father's house again.
If a child loses respect for his parents, a child loses respect for the world. And I lost respect for my dad because I thought this guy couldn't protect me. So for me, at that moment in time, I was on a search, not knowing, but I was on a search for someone to protect me.
He was placed in a foster home in South London with a Nigerian woman and her son. For a short while, his life seemed better, more normal. He went to school, helped his carer in her garden. He was happy.
So I was like 10, 11. And at that moment of time, I was allowed to go to the park across the road because it's summer holidays and obviously don't leave him in the house all day. Literally, so I was allowed to go to the park across the road. I had a BMX. And there were kids in the park, which were, they were a lot older than me. They were more, I'll say, just probably a year younger than my foster carer's son.
So kind of 15.
Yeah. And they used to be in the park a lot. I'll say first, it was probably the girls in the group that were chatting to me. And for me, that girls. I'm young, so I'm like, girls. Then after that, see, the boys and that started chatting to me too. Could you take this to Lucy's house? I literally got a bike. Instead of us coming, you can just get on the bike and go to Lucy's house. And we literally, they told me where to go. And for a bit, I'd done that because I thought, oh, like, literally just helping them. For me, I wasn't getting paid, like, literally. So it was just the fact of, I was just helping my friends. Always be asked that, did you know it was drugs that you were selling? Like, it was that, for me at that moment of time, it was just literally raps. I was not that entwined to drugs or knew what crack cocaine or heroin was. Like, to me, like, I'm from Nigeria. Like, I've never heard in my life of drugs. So, to me, it's like, I just thought it was raps. So, I'm helping them deliver their little raps. So.
And do you remember that summer in terms of how it felt when you were with them?
I felt like I fitted in. I felt like these people, like, they like me.
Sosa was willing to do anything to be liked. Before long, he was asked to start doing jobs outside of London.
So they said, something's happened and I can clearly see something's happened because they're there.
What, like some kind of drama or...?
Yeah, some sort of drama's happened where the older's on the phone, they're all panicking and getting angry and now they need someone to go up where this person was. So they first asked me, and my first response was no, like, I can't do that because I respected my foster carer.
Like out of London or out the neighbourhood?
Basically. Yeah, they asked me, they said to me, would I be able to leave and literally go to a spot for a week? That's what they first asked. And I said, no, they're not. Like literally, I've got my foster carer, she's going to be worried. I can't do that. Probably like a couple of days after that, the same group of elders have come back and said, rah, cool. You might as well go up there for the day, we'll take you there in the morning tomorrow and we'll pick you up in the evening.
Do you know where it was? That you
yeah,
went?
It was Margate.
Margate.
It was Margate. Okay. So I got told to go there for a day. Also, I was being given weed. Well, at that moment of time, I never knew really what weed was. I just thought, yep, pass it. Yep, I'm smoking it with them. I'm thinking, everything's calm. Like, everything's cool. They drove me there. And then we got to the place. It was a house in a corner street. It was not that far from the seafront. I was taken into the house and there was a guy living in there. I was there with the elders for a bit and probably a couple of hours into it, they left. And they said they were going to come pick me up later. And the house was dirty, TV was old, takeaway everywhere.
Did you know what you were supposed to be doing in this house?
Nah, at this moment of time, I got told before they left that literally, if he asks for white, it comes from this one that looks white. If he asks for dark, it comes from this one that looks black. I was also introduced on how to bank, how to plug. So they said to me, if anything, you need to put this up. I'm trying to say it to you. So,
like, yeah, put it inside yourself?
Yeah. So for me, I thought, raw, that's a bit mad. I literally, fam.
And this is before, as they dropped you off in the house.
This is when they dropped me off in Margate. They were telling me everything. And I was told to bank in front of them. So after they knew I could bank, I'll say like an hour after that, that's when they left. after they left, it was me and this guy. And this guy was in his room 24/7. And I was just in the front room. I was just in the front room watching TV. And every time he came in, he would ask me for maybe 6 on 2. And I'll give him 6 on 2. He'll give me cash.
Okay.
And he'll come back, give me cash, go back in his room.
It's only looking back that Sosa's able to see what was going on. That he was supplying crack and heroin to this stranger in their house.
At that moment of time, I didn't know why, what was going on. Obviously, now I could tell you that an addict cannot be trusted with that amount of drugs. So it's like literally me being in the house is just to make sure that their business is being run smoothly. So I was basically the middleman between the gang and the addict. The evening has come and no one's answering the phone. So I'm calling, no one's answering the phone. I'm telling him to call. Like, he's all making excuses not to make phone calls. Like, so I'm just sitting there waiting for these people to come. It's got to the next morning. This guy's continuously keep on coming to me, asking me for stuff. And he's kind of going, coming back, giving me cash. We've done this for the next 3 days, literally, and sat in that house, not stepped foot out of that house. Like, once a day, he'll come back with food.
Were you stressed?
At that moment of time, I was thinking about my foster care. Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about my foster care, thinking I'm in trouble. Like,
so
literally.
What happened? When did they come and get you?
So, 3 days has gone. And in that 3 days now, at night time, there's been knock on the door. And when he's gone to open the door now, it's been silent. Then, all of a sudden, outburst. The door's flown open into the front room. And I've seen like a good amount of people. Like, I'd probably say definitely more than 5. A lot of people. A pump gauge shotgun pointed in my face. And then swords, machetes. Like, literally, I'm getting told, oh, where's this? Where's this person? Where's this person? And at this moment in time, I don't know who the hell they're talking about.
And these are adults?
These are, like, grown. Like, they were a lot taller than me. Yeah. Like, to me, they were a lot taller than me. And they were basically giants to me. To me, I'm like, I don't know what they're talking about. I don't know what's going on. But then, one of them, he's got the, like, gun in my face. But he's looking, like, trying to look into my face. He's trying to look into my face. Then, it's that the aura's changed. Like, what are you doing here? The guy's like to me, Bro, you should be at home. But he's taken off his, obviously he had a bandana on his face, and he's taken off his bandana. And I realised it's one of my foster carer's nephew's friends.
Right.
So he's just there like, what the hell? Like, literally. Like, so he's there like, get in the car. And I was being driven back to London. But in the car, I now had 2 parcels. So I had a parcel claimed money. Then I also had another parcel of drugs. But I didn't know. So this time,
belonged to the gang that brought you down.
Yeah, down there. So I've then asked these lot, like, I've got this. And what should I do with it? And one of them is literally the guy that was sitting in the front passenger. I said to me, brother, we don't want that. We went there for our ops. So they went there not for drugs or to rob anyone. They literally went there to go get the enemy. The gang
that brought
me there. They said to me, keep it. By that moment in time, I didn't know what to do with a drug parcel. So I said to them, I don't know what to do with this. But I knew what to do with money, though. I knew what to do with the money. But I didn't know what to do with that. Like, literally. So I said to them, oh, I don't know what to do with this. And the one that was sitting probably to the left of me was the one that took the parcel off my hand straight away and said, yep, all right, we'll deal with that. I started getting phone calls a couple of weeks after from the gang that sent me up there. I was on the way to school in the morning. I go on the 17...
You're like a year 7.
Yeah. And I go on a 178 bus. And I remember it was one of these old school phones. And I remember getting a phone call, getting told, where are you? And I'm like, I'm on the way to school. And they're like, fam, you think you can rob us? So they're saying to me now, if they see me, they're going to kill me. And if they see my foster carer, they're going to kill my foster carer. And I'm trying to tell him, I've got the money. The people that came in the house took the stuff. Like, bro, shut up. Okay. Like, literally, I'm just getting to the shut up. Like, fam, see you. When I see you, you're getting it. Shortly after I had a LAC review, I looked after child review with social services, which obviously I disclosed with social services and told them, rah, like, this what's going on, innit? Like, this what's happening. Obviously, I'm being threatened and I owe people and all of this and all of that. And at that moment of time, exploitation went known of and weren't heard of, innit? So to them, it was like, this is the exact word, you must be fantasizing. A young boy your age can't be living that type of life.
Sosa was trying to tell social services what was happening. But it's 2011, well before they knew anything about county lines or how gangs were exploiting children.
And for me at that moment of time was like, you lot are not going to help me. So I went to the people that were willing to help me. The LAC review was probably like on a Wednesday. By Friday, I was on a block now with the older boys that came into the house. And I'm on a block sitting there telling them that these lot are keep on calling my phone, all of this and all of that. They made me call them lot. And they spoke to them lot. But after that conversation, I was given a revolver 380. Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 11, 12, yeah. Slowly after that, I kept on being picked up after school.
They just turn up.
Just shout me and tell me, we're coming to get you after school. So literally meet us at the Dover Patrol, where the chicken shop is, where like literally everyone usually go to after school. I get told, yeah, boom, we're going to be there. I'll go there and I'll be taken to a forest to learn how to shoot. And then after that, I was then put to work. Once I was being taken to the forest and I was being taught how to shoot a firearm, I already knew straight away, like, cool, maybe I should be worried now. But then also at that moment of time, it's these lot are the only one that's safeguarding me and protecting me.
Yeah.
Like, this is my family. Like, these lot have me.
Were they like that? Did you feel like they were your family?
They did not once, like, bully me or anything like that at that moment of time. At that moment of time, it was all, whatever you need, we give you. Literally, that's where it was. Whatever we need, we give you.
What do you think you were looking for at that time?
I was looking for a family. I was looking to fit in. I was looking for protection. I was looking for safety. I was looking for everything you look for in your parents, in these people. And then these people, they didn't know how to be parents. They only knew how to be how they were, which unfortunately was literally murderers, drug dealers and robbers. And that's the real truth.
What was the work?
Yeah, it's mad. I mean, but it was one of the things where, like, situation where I was in a car and I was told, if you don't shoot, we're going to shoot you. And everyone in the car had a firearm, including me.
And you were 11?
I was 11.
And was it was robbery, as you just said, robbery, drug dealing?
Everything. Like, literally, I was doing everything. Like, I was their go-to. There was other kids on the block which were a lot older than me. They were more involved in county lines and involved in selling drugs in the ends. Me at that moment of time was that I was literally their soldier.
Okay.
And it was that cool. Every time I was given a vest on my 12th birthday. I was given a shotgun for my 12th birthday.
Why didn't they put you on the lines? Like, why did they see you in that world, do you think?
At that moment of time for me, I also believed was that I was angry. And you can see it. They used my anger to their best ability. That best form for them. Like, literally.
What do you think were the kind of psychological strategies that you as a 12-year-old were putting into play just to get through that?
I lived in a different world. I did not live in reality. Like, mentally, I lived in my head.
When he was 8, Sosa was hiding under his duvet from his stepmother. He learnt then how to mentally escape what was happening to him. And now he was doing it again.
Thank you. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
As Sosa was pulled into the gang, any support or help from the outside world fell away. He lost his foster home and he was placed in temporary accommodation on his own instead.
I was put into a placement, and this placement was in East London. And I was basically living there on my own. I had someone come in and check up on me, but I was living there on my own. And also with social services, they at this moment in time classed me as a gang member and said I was not allowed to be around any other children. So I couldn't be placed when kids are in the house, anything like that.
So you're totally isolated?
Yeah. And at that moment in time also, I would say that with the gang, they had a heavy hold on me. I was always on goal for them and they always had things for me to do. So it was not like I had a time for like, oh, let me go to school today. It was like, oh, what? Come make some money with us, you know what I'm saying? And it was like, okay. Yeah, it was like that for a bit till then. I'll say it was probably too late for social services where I stopped coming to the placement. Then the gang, they had placements for me. They were all around, like 24/7 with them. You know what I'm trying to say to you?
So you were like meshed in.
Yeah.
There was no way.
There was no anywhere out. Like literally, I was 24/7 with my elders and I was in cars, driven everywhere, taken to house, different houses. Whatever older I was left with at the end of the evening, that's the older I stayed with. Do you get what I'm trying to say to you?
So you were just dotting around with whoever was...
Like, literally.
So, you were with last, basically, that day.
That's who I'm staying with. Like, literally, they will make sure that I have somewhere to stay.
It had only been a few years since he left his home. But as Sosa tells me, by this point, he's a completely different child.
But when I was 8, I was a bit much more... Like, even though a lot was happening at home, I was more smiley. I used to mask a lot of my pain with smiles. Like, literally, I used to smile a lot. But then... At 12, I'm not face screwed up. What were you smiling for? I got told not to smile no more. I got told that like, literally crying is weakness. All these type of things that was put into me from a very young age where at that moment of time, I had short hair when I was 8. When I was 12, I had long hair. More rowdy, more loud. To the world, it was like I was more confident. But to me, I was literally trying to live up to the old, like what the elders wanted me to be.
So it's like a character you're playing?
Yeah, it's like I built, for years, I felt like I built a whole new character when I was like 8 and all of that, and I was in primary school. I loved to dance. Literally, I loved to dance. I used to love to dance. I used to love playing basketball. There was so much I used to love doing. But because of the person that everyone wanted me to be at that moment in time, that was not what they wanted me to be a dancing type of guy. They wanted me to be an angry, aggressive, all of that, like literally. And I really took it in. And it's like a lot of it built with no one else loves you. We do. Do you get what I'm trying to say to you? Like literally, fam, to the point where I used to tell my elders, like, man loves you. Like, and I genuinely meant that because to me, I would give my life for this man. Like literally, this is like, man, this is like my brother. This is like, my dad, he's like everything to me, so I would give my life to you. Do you know what I'm going to say to you? And like, it got to that point where elders used to say that to me too, like, oh, like, you know, like, you're my little bro, man loves you, innit? Like, man, I've got you. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Sosa says his life was nothing but the gang for 2 years. He spent his time being driven across the country, delivering guns or drugs. But inevitably, the law eventually caught up with him. At 14, he was arrested along with an older gang member.
What were you charged with?
I was charged with possession of a shotgun without a certificate and GBH with intent, but it was dropped. And then I was given bail. Then I was told to go on a run. I went on a run, and while I was on a run, I was being blamed in court by my co-defendant, which was a lot older than me. And then when I was arrested by the police, I was found guilty in my absence, and I went back to be sentenced. I was raised that, right, you don't do certain things. Speaking to the police or speaking in court and all these type of things.
For Sosa, it wasn't just that he was about to be sent to prison. He felt he was sold out by his own gang, who told him to go on the run and then put the blame on him in court.
So for me, it was at that moment of time, this is all I know.
Yeah.
And a betrayal, usually when I'm involved with this gang, a betrayal is dealt with in violence. And that's what I took it as, that they betrayed me. Now we're going to war.
Yeah.
Like, literally. And I went to war.
That war, how Sosa got into it and how he got out, is coming up tomorrow for part two of The Devil Walking on Earth. I'm Annie Kelly. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producer is Elizabeth Casson.
This is The Guardian.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.